Now is the time to make a difference at the station and in the community. Thank you. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be discussing exotic animals living as pets or otherwise where they don't belong and may need to be rescued by our guest, Tim Harrison, who's also prominently featured in the acclaimed documentary, The Elephant in the Living Room, released yesterday on DVD. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This one, a nod to Tim, who often has to tangle with serpents and snakes of one kind or another. This is Iron and Wine with Serpent Charmer here on Talking Animals. Good morning. Serpent Charmer, animal song. These in today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Tim Harrison, an Ohio public safety officer who has spent much of his 35-plus year career rescuing exotic animals kept as pets. He's also one of the main figures in The Elephant in the Living Room, an acclaimed award-winning documentary film examining the American subculture of those who raise and keep dangerous animals as household pets. Find out about Tim's work, about the documentary, which was released on DVD yesterday, and more when we speak with Tim Harrison in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663. Or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, which involves animal comedy. Play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Erasure on August 31st at the Ritz Ebor. We'll also remember John Taylor, one of my closest friends and a pivotal figure in the success of Talking Animals, who died Saturday at 49. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements. A look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. So, turning now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news, and produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item comes right on the heels, really, of last week's conversation with Laura Flynn Amato, the so-called Madonna of the Mills, with the documentary by the same name. Puppy mills, and of course, part of that discussion last week was the importance of not buying a dog at a pet store, there's this announcement from the Toronto, or story actually, I should say, from the Toronto store. Star. Don't ask how much that doggy is in the window. It begins at least at PJ's Pet Stores, as the retail chain announced last week that it will stop selling puppies on September 1st. It's part of a company plan to promote adoption from animal shelters or humane societies. It has already adopted the policy in Atlantic Canada, where its stores operate under the Pets Unlimited banner. Quote, there's a good need for, great need, really, for pets to be adopted, says Stacey Holliday, director of marketing, but it's a conflict of interest because you can't sell and adopt out at the same time. It's a new era for PJs. It's been part of our business for 40 years, she said, adding that it will have an effect on the bottom line because puppies made up 7% of the chain's overall business, though only 6 of 41 stores sell dogs. Depending on breed and age, puppies range in price from $500 to $1,500, with an average price tag of $1,000, she said. So, giving it up. Yay to PJ's Pet Stores. Closer to home, got this from the Gainesville Sun. The owners of Haven Acres Cat Sanctuary in High Springs were arrested last week and charged with 47 counts of animal cruelty stemming from the June 7 seizure of 697 felines from the facility. Alachua County Animal Services Director David Flagler said the number of counts is a reflection of the dire conditions that were found at the operation owned by Penny and Steve Lefkowitz. The number of animals will indicate to the court the seriousness that we were not dealing with just a couple of animals, Flagler said. These counts seem to represent the problem here. We had a large number of animals that were dying when we found them. And goes on to say that started off probably very well-intentioned, but these folks just became overwhelmed and things got out of control. So on a very related note, the Humane Society of the United States is working with Alachua County Animal Services and others to do a huge adoption event this weekend. There'll be probably over 500 cats available for adoption from Friday the 26th through Sunday the 28th. 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., I think, all those days at Alachua County Humane Society, 4205 Northwest 6th Street, Gainesville, Florida. If you're not around there and you're hearing this, field trip maybe, right? Help out these cats. In the mark your calendar vein, I want to remind you again that our friends at Florida Voices for Animals are gearing up to present their second annual Tampa Bay Veg Fest. The second annual Tampa Bay Veg Fest will be held October 15th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. in beautiful Cotonchobee Fort Brook Park in downtown Tampa in honor of World Farm Animals Day. The park is located behind the St. Pete Times Forum on the Hillsborough River. Admission is, shall we just say, incredibly reasonable since we can't say the prices on the air. Incredibly reasonable. There'll be educational exhibits and events, including activities for children. Companion animals on leashes are welcome. The event will include healthy living and eco-friendly exhibitors, nationally known and local speakers, nonprofits, fun and games for kids, dog and cat adoptions, restaurant booths with delicious veg food, and live music and entertainment, and more. So, you can find out all about it by going to TampaBayVegFest.org. Also in the Save the Date vein, coming up, the Greyhound Support Transport Fall Picnic, Sunday, October 2nd. At Eagle Lake Park, 1800 Keene Road, Shelter 2 in Largo. That's going to be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's for you and your four-legged friends. There'll be a barbecue, silent auction raffle, and a few extra surprises. So find out more by calling 813-263-3427. And one other thing, gosh, there's so many things. We're going to have to either try them later in the show or next week. But want to also follow up on another of our recent guests, Dr. Michael Greger. And got a note from him that the nutritionfacts.org is now officially launched. This is the thing where every day he's going to have a new video about some nutrition study or information. And so you can subscribe to the daily video feed, follow the site on Facebook, Twitter, and just it's great. Obviously, he's really smart and cool and totally well-informed and studying all these things to make it easy and accessible for us. So you can go to nutritionfacts.org to visit that and get that scoop. All right, let's step now into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. As always, today we're going to do a piece that has some relevance to our forthcoming conversation with Tim Harrison, at least the latter part might. a Talking Animals fave. This is Brian Regan with a piece called Flipper and Gentle Ben on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I watched a lot of Flipper growing up. Flipper, he was something. Always saving people. Every show he'd go save some more. I save some people! For that, they would throw him a dead fish. Hey, thanks. Thanks for saving people. He was always doing that backwards dance, three quarters out of the water. Man, that was cool. Imagine if you could do that. That'd impress some people at the public pool, you know? Just go, hey, how y'all doing? Just skip across the top of the pool without getting your bathing suit wet and hop up on the other side. Hey, what's happening? And just grab a little towel, wipe off your feet. Yeah, it's a little colder than I thought. Wow, who's that guy? I thought, to be fair, they should have also had a bad dolphin, you know? Zipper! Big scar across his head. I'm moving safety buoys around. Deal with that, Flipper! Out chewing tobacco. Ah, Zipper surly. He is uncaring. How about that show, Gentle Ben? Do you remember that show? About a big friendly bear. There's a good thing to teach kids. Hey, bears are friendly. Go up and let them give you a big hug. Put some honey on your face. Let them lick it off. Bears love kids with honey on their heads. They love honeyhead kids. Hey, Gentle Ben, where's Bobby? Bobby. Ben's wearing Bobby's hat. I don't know where he is. Picking his teeth. I think he scampered off that way. He was scampering.
All right, that was Brian Regan with a piece called Flipper and Gentle Ben, taken from his album simply entitled Live. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Tim Harrison. As I touched on earlier, Tim is a public safety officer in Ohio who has spent much of his 35-plus year career rescuing exotic animals kept as pets and sometimes rescuing the people keeping those pets. Tim is also at the center of The Elephant in the Living Room, an acclaimed award-winning documentary film examining the singular world of those who raise and keep dangerous animals as household pets. No less a documentary authority than Michael Moore praised Elephant as, quote, one of the scariest, most entertaining, and technically perfect films, end quote. The movie was released on DVD yesterday. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Tim Harrison to Talking Animals. Welcome, Tim.
Hey, thanks for letting me be on.
Oh, gosh, thanks so much for making the time to join us. Really excited to speak with you about all kinds of things. Let's first, though, maybe start with just a little bit of introductory overview stuff. You're a public safety officer in Ohio, as I mentioned once or twice. What does that mean? I mean, I know, I know what Ohio means, but what does public safety officer mean?
Well, it's kind of, when people saw the film, too, they looked at it, they saw my patch. I'm actually a police officer, firefighter, and paramedic. We do all three jobs. And it's kind of an unusual, it's just a few of those places around North America that do it that way. So it's we wrapped up, we do all three jobs.
So you're trained in all three disciplines, but once you've completed all that training, are you then sort of entitled to say, hey, I'd kind of like to specialize or kind of head more this direction? Or are you expected to, sort of given that breadth of your training, do whatever comes up in any given situation?
Yeah, we cannot just take one spot. We have to be proficient at all of them at all times. And I've been doing it for 29 years. I just retired last year from doing it. And you're training for the rest of your life, basically, when you get in. It's like going to college forever. But the whole thing is that it's great to be that way. So that way opens doors for me for other things. I'm a Homeland Security instructor at Texas A&M for Unified Command for Weapons of Mass Destruction, Terrorism, and Natural Disasters. Because they had me come in, hey, you know, you're already unified already, all by yourself. You know?
Yeah, you're like three guys, three guys in one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works, yeah.
Cool. So with all that in mind and kind of, sort of roaming around from situation or crisis or emergency to from one to the next, what is the path that led then to your rescuing exotic animals, which I gather over time became maybe more and more a center of your day-to-day work?
Yeah, actually, when I was back in 1970s, I was actually in high school. I started working for a veterinarian. He used to be a zoo vet, and he'd get called out every once in a while. A big guy, big strong guy, used to be a football player, and he'd get called out, and he'd have me come along. And we maybe get a python loose, maybe one or two a year, maybe a bear. Somebody might have had a bear. But 1995, when reality TV started, Animal Planet, some of the shows they had on there, you know, Crocodile Hunter, shows like that.
Yeah.
People actually started bringing these things into their homes, like a monkey see, monkey do kind of thing. And it just exploded. I had over 100. In 1996, I had over 100 of the most dangerous animals. People had brought them in. I had to get a book sometime, open them up and see what kind of snake they were, because they were coming in from all these different countries.
Wow. Well, I want to definitely, in a moment or two, get more into sort of just, you know, shows on TV, your views on those and some of the people that go on them. But so it sounds like you were kind of maybe always an animal guy, because initially, if I follow you, this was almost kind of a side thing to go kind of help out the vet and work with him.
Yeah, it was. I was still going to school, and I was doing the sports and everything else in high school, and I just liked animals. I love dogs and cats. Absolutely love them, and then just enjoyed being around them. And I lived on a farm for a while, and I just liked animals, and I thought this would be a great part-time job for me, come in, clean the kennels, and help the veterinarian out, and I turned into a veterinarian assistant. After a period of time, he started training me and everything else, and it just fell into it, and I really wasn't into exotic animals at that time. I kind of liked wild animals. I like going places and seeing them, but I didn't want to ever get close to them. I thought it was, you know, respect-wise, just leave them alone.
Sure.
But then I got hooked into it. It just became something I really, really got into.
And actually, let me just let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Tim Harrison, a retired public safety officer who spent many years rescuing exotic animals, kept his pets, and as such is at the center of The Elephant in the Living Room, an acclaimed documentary that was released on DVD yesterday. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Tim a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Well, so how would you, I mean, that's a lot of, you know, a lot of years of doing that. How would you say your approach or style in responding to these calls or these situations may have changed over the years? I mean, one of the things I was really struck by in the film was not just your calm demeanor when trying to rescue or capture snakes or other exotic animals, but how plain old nice you were to the people who sometimes found themselves in these kind of nutty and often dangerous, you know, situations. I mean, it just seemed like, okay, well, we're in this together. We'll get through it. But really calm and really, again, really just kind of nice and kind.
Yeah, because really, you know, I was that way when I was younger. I raised these animals in my home. I was kind of on the dark side for a long period of time until I realized this is not right for the animals. I started seeing these animals. I'd rescue a big tiger, and I take it and I get it to a rescue facility I thought I could trust. Well, they resell it out to the public again. And after the third time catching it or coming to get it out of a home, it had to be put down because the health was bad for it. And I kept thinking, seeing a large animal like that being put down broke my heart. And I realized this is becoming an epidemic where people are getting too many. As you saw in the film, they're giving them away now on those classified ads because there's too many tigers, too many you know, lions and things.
Yeah.
So it kind of broke my heart. And then the first time you see somebody, you know, I've lost friends from exotic animals, but I've also just to see a child being been constricted to death by a python. That's, you know, you'd be out here doing the same thing I'm doing, Duncan. It just changed my life totally.
Sure. Yeah, it's just, and again, I guess probably seeing that over the years and just your own love of animals and just, I guess, maybe your own personality and temperament. Because, I mean, you know, another part of the film that people haven't seen it again, that they may want to buy or beg, borrow, steal, whatever, the DVD now that it's out, but kind of, you're, in effect, your co-star, for lack of a better term, Terry Brumfield, you know, he's obviously a bit of an eccentric fellow, not really in good health, and, by the way, he keeps two lions at his house.
Yeah.
But you know, the first time we, at least in the film, see you encounter him, it's not like, hey, Terry, you nutcase, what do you have two freaking lions in your backyard? You're, again, totally kind, friendly, like just sort of teaming up with him, like, hey, how, you know, how can I help you, really? And was that partly influenced by Terry and how, you know, you just sort of felt him, again, given your own experience, having been somewhat there in the past?
Yeah, I have sympathy for these people because as a police officer, I'm after the dealers, the drug dealers. They're the bad guy, the real bad guys, because they're not telling the people about the poison they're selling them. Drug-wise, it's the same with these animal dealers. They're selling these animals to people, telling them, hey, you get them declawed, you do all these things to them, you surgically alter them. Oh, you know, it'd be great. Keep your alligator in a bathtub. It'll never grow any bigger than your bathtub. Things like this, these are the bad guys. These are the ones I go after. So Terry people, I have more sympathy for them. But I always realized over the years, you got to go through the people to get to the animal and change the people so they don't do it again.
Sure.
You know, and Terry was my biggest ambassador. He was great. He called, you know, people would get on those websites and go after me. He'd go after them and say, listen, you have no idea. He doesn't save just animals. He saves people.
Wow. Well, that's a big, big endorsement. Because, again, you know, it's just there this guy is with the two lions in his backyard. And then later as the film unfolds, not surprising, maybe, you know, one of those lions has cubs. So then it's a whole different, you know, sort of set of challenges. And so, it's really, I mean, part of what makes this film, I think, really notable as docs go is the filmmaker really had a background in feature film, so he employed a lot of feature film techniques. So there's great characters, there's great storytelling, there's kind of, you know, conflict in a sense, and plus it's funny and it's entertaining while there's really important information being imparted. So that's a pretty darn good doc at that point. So
yeah, I chose wisely with the director here. I didn't want to do any kind of films. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to go out and do what I was doing, and Mike came into my life, and it went well.
So I think we've already kind of touched on this, so it's pretty rhetorical. But let me just say, having spent all these years rescuing exotic animals and dealing with the people who keep them as pets, Terry types and other types, I'd love to hear your theories on why these people are attracted to those animals. Is it a rogue thing? Are they kind of estranged from people? I mean, probably a variety of answers, I guess, case by case, but...
Well, the main thing is if you listen to Dr. Roger Paholka, the emergency room doctor that's at the busiest emergency room in Ohio, you know, 6 months a year, and he goes to South Africa and just, you know, over there for 6 months a year. This guy says it perfectly. You know, the people watch these shows, and they honestly believe they can do what their heroes do on the Jay Leno show or all these talk shows. You know, they bring these animals that have been sedated, surgically altered on there, and people think they can do that. And everybody, you know, you stand outside a zoo. I hate to say this. The zoos are changing, but the zoo... And you ask kids and they leave, and adults, do you want a tiger? Oh, yeah, I want a tiger. Do you want a monkey? They haven't been taught anything in the educational facilities or on educational TV. It's just the opposite. I want one. In Africa, no. I'm bringing a lion to my house. I respect these things. I understand what they can do. We have a misunderstanding of all this, you know? So to me, there's a lot of misrepresentation going across the country through our educational system. But I could tell you right now, the zoos are changing. I've been talking to quite a few of the zoo people since this film came out.
I'll bet. Yeah. No, I'm sure this has probably, influenced all kinds of people at all kinds of levels. But really, this might be as good a time as any to get a little more into talk shows and other things on TV that have so-called experts who go on them. And just maybe talk a little bit about that. I mean, you've kind of alluded to the fact that many times those animals are sedated or altered, which again, most of us sitting in our living rooms or wherever don't know. So right away, you're getting a misleading kind of message.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, perfect example you saw in the extras on the DVD where Lambert actually, we have it filmed where Lambert actually turns, as they say, turns on Terry, the lion that loved him to death. Doesn't bother any rest of us, but goes after Terry because he considers Terry being the leader of the pride. And if anybody had any idea what lions, or even got a book on it before they would bring one in their home, they'd understand when a male lion has cubs, mature, sexually mature, gets bigger, it's time for him to take over the pride. And Terry says it beautifully. He looks at the camera after Lambert comes after him. He goes, "Yeah, yesterday he was my best friend, and today, man, he don't want me. I don't get it." Breaks his heart.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't realize when they get these animals. They are wild animals, and it's almost like bringing in a time bomb in your home. You don't know what's going to trigger it. It could be the cologne you're wearing, the two beers you just had, threw off your body language. It could be anything that triggers these off. But with these TV hosts and stuff, when you surgically alter an animal, when you take the claws out of a tiger, you know how hard it was for me to find a home for lions that add their claws on the film. Mm. Imagine how hard it would be for me to find a home for a tiger with no claws that cannot be put in with other cats.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we've talked about this on the show a number of times over the years. It's so disfiguring to those cats, and they really can't function. But, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Tim Harrison, featured in The Elephant in the Living Room, an award-winning documentary released on DVD yesterday. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Let's put one of our callers into the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Tim Harrison.
Hi, yeah. My name is George, and this is a great topic.
Did you have a question or a comment for Tim?
Yeah, a comment. Yeah, I remember when Chris Rock said, you know, that tiger went tiger, and when he bit the guy that used to put his head in the tiger's mouth, I'm thinking, yeah, they're still tigers, but we think that they're little kitties. But I've gone a little further extreme. I refuse to go to any zoos. I refuse to go to any parks that sponsor, for example, SeaWorld. I don't go there because I think these animals shouldn't be in captivity. If you want to see them, save up some money and go on an African safari and support the reservations that are keeping these animals alive, or get charter a boat. You want to go see whales? Charter a boat and go out to Alaska. I mean, I think we want convenience, so people pack these animals in cages and just for our convenience, and I'm totally against that. And I'm having a big fight right now with my wife because she wants to take my 5-year-old to SeaWorld, you know, to see all the animals. I'm like, no. If you want to see them, we'll charter a boat, and it'll cost us $3,000 or $4,000, but it's worth it.
Well, I think you're right on the money. Good luck in that argument with your wife, and all right, and thanks so much for the call.
You know, he's absolutely right. We take groups over to Africa. We take science teachers, school teachers, and groups through our organization, outreachforanimals.org. And people can go over and actually see African lions. And when they come back, they do not want to see them in captivity.
Yeah.
Don't you see them in the wild?
For sure. And God, we've got so many cool people responding here. Let's read one of our emails. Your guest is so right, it says. Our local sanctuary has 4 panthers rescued by the DEA from drug dealers who had the animals chained up and declawed. Releasing them is not an option. It says here, is U.S. Customs doing enough on busting the importers?
It's hard for them because there's not enough of them.
Yeah.
You know, there's not enough out there. If you go down to Miami International Airport, I know a couple of the fire chiefs down there and everything else, they say it's like unbelievable. It's like going into Indiana Jones at the end of the movie where you walk into that room and there's just boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes. It's hard to go through everything to find everything. And they're always figuring different ways to sneak them into the country. But the one I'm getting ready to write a third book, it's going to be coming out next year, called The Forgotten, because we're forgetting we have 3,000-plus tigers in Texas permitted. We're forgetting all about these guys.
Yeah.
You know, these animals are forgotten. We got more tigers in the United States than they'll ever have in the wild, and we need to take care of what we got here, too.
Sure. Well, so that might, I mean, really, this can't help but remind me that really another kind of striking part of the film sort of provides glimpses of the whole exotic animal market, or black market maybe more, where you really can purchase just about any animal, including highly dangerous ones. Can you describe a little bit, for people who haven't yet seen the film, can you describe a little bit about how those markets work and what kind of animals are offered there?
Yeah, when the film, we actually have the state of Ohio, because it's number one for the sale of dangerous exotic animals right now. We have these humongous auctions up here, and they're in the Amish country, but it's not the Amish that are raising them. It's the rescue facilities and uncredited zoos that are bringing in their animals to sell. But you walk into a place like that, it's packed. It's literally packed from wall to wall in the stands with hundreds and hundreds of people in each barn, and they bring out tiger cubs, lion cubs, black leopards, pythons, kangaroos, anything you want. They bring them out and auction them just like you would do, any kind of product. You know, you're bringing it out like a car, auctioning a car off. It's sick. Lots of primates. It just breaks your heart to see primates. And as you saw in the film, they were selling hyenas. Anybody can buy anything they want and walk out with it without anybody saying boo to them.
Well, yeah, not only that, but some of those things were incredibly dangerous that were in like crummy, sort of plastic bins that, you know, anybody could sort of bust through or weak. And it's like, holy cow, man.
Well, look at the venomous snakes. They put them in deli cups just like you get your potato salad, you know?
Yeah.
Just like if you go to a grocery store to get your potato salad. And then you got a mamba, you got gaboon vipers inside these, and they were selling them to kids under 16 years old.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. There is no the sad part, everything you saw in that film is absolutely legal. Absolutely legal. That wasn't even black market in that film at all, and that's what shocks a lot of people.
Sure. Well, that's, unfortunately, a recurring theme of this show is how much there are gigantic holes in legislation across all kinds of important animal issues. But this one, when you especially get a glimpse of, how easy you can get a black mama or whatever, I mean, it's just particularly egregious. Let's get another caller in on the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Tim Harrison.
Hi, good morning. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on what happened with Siegfried and Roy, the tiger there, that they'd had since they were cubs, and then one day just turned on him. Do you recall that incident?
Oh, yeah. Actually, my second book's got a whole chapter on that. Because one thing, the other caller brought it up beautifully, that tiger did not turn on Roy. That tiger just went tiger, and that was probably the greatest tiger show ever put on stage, because that's what a tiger is supposed to do. It's not supposed to do magic tricks and jump through hoops and do all this stuff. A lot of their cats you see on these magicians using everything else have been surgically altered or been sedated a little bit. When Roy got in that situation with his tiger, he put himself into that, but he endangered all the people in the crowd, and he endangered that animal. And that's what upsets me the most. And, you know, that's what I laugh about this. I'm a police officer. When one of us gets shot or killed out on duty, we show the film to the public. We want everybody, other officers out there to know, hey, this is what happened. Please don't fall into that. We have never seen the video. So they will not release it. Or Mirage will not release it on how he died and how this incident works so we can learn from it. No, they hide it because they don't want anybody to know that this is not right for the animals. Same with Steve Irwin. We have not seen the film how he got stabbed by a stingray. We need to see that film so we don't imitate what happens to that. But these experts will not allow us to see it because it makes them look bad.
And speaking of that, Tim, let me just say my essay question for today is, Jack Hanna, a force for good or evil? Discuss.
That's good. That's a good topic. See, I know Jack Hanna, and he's a good person. I do not agree with anything he does. Absolutely not. I don't agree with him taking the animals on David Letterman's show. I don't agree with any of that. And he has some shadows in his, you know, some skeletons in his closet.
Yeah.
All I know is that I am not for promoting animals by dragging an animal out on stage. I've done that in the past. I don't like that. I've learned valuable lessons. It's not right for the animal. Anytime you stress an animal, just think about when you watch on TV. Anytime you have to upset an animal that it chases you or attacks the camera, that is animal harassment.
Sure.
Okay, just that simple.
Well, and really, I think one of my favorite things, not only for the colorful quote, but because it put two, you know, people that one obviously had a tale of redemption and one who's nowhere near a tale of redemption. But when Rick O'Berry, the, of course, ex-Dolphin trainer and center of the Oscar-winning documentary The Cove, appeared on Larry King, he famously called Hanna a dyed-in-the-wool PR hack for zoos and dolphin amusement parks. And Hanna instantly said, and I'm very proud of it, too. So I just thought, boy, you know, and just
explains it right there.
Yeah, that's everything.
That explains it, Duncan,
yeah.
Right there. It's all for the money, which I'm just the opposite, and people like yourself and your listeners, we are totally against it. See, that's not like what Rickleberry says. That's not SeaWorld. That's Cement World. If you want to go to SeaWorld, you go a couple hundred miles either way in Florida, you'll run into the real wildlife.
Absolutely. Let's take another call here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Tim Harrison. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, it's you. Do you have a question or comment for Tim?
Yes. He keeps commenting that they sedate the animals when they put them on stage, and you know, I'm sitting here going, no, they don't. I mean, a sedated animal, and he should know this, is very unpredictable, and nobody would want to sedate an animal and take them out on stage. Why
well, I don't know
that?
How many veterinarians work for, but it's easy to give them a little something to take the edge off. They do that. If you ever watched when they had the first perfect example I use in my PowerPoint presentations when I do colleges and high schools is that when you brought the wolf out, I've been around, I actually helped with the wolf recovery program out in Yellowstone. When you brought the wolf out on the stage, he was getting a little something to take the edge off. The wolf jumps up on the couch, lays down, and looks at the camera. Now, we all know what a real wolf does. It paces back and forth, looking at those lights. It's going to be acting like a wild animal. So you can give them a little something
to take
the edge
off. It depends on the wolf and how it was socialized.
What's that?
That depends on the wolf itself and how it was socialized.
Yeah, I've been around hundreds of wolves, and there's no wolf that you can take directly on a stage like that unless you give them a little extra something to take the edge off.
So you're going to say the same thing about lions and tigers?
Oh, absolutely. Because I can tell you right now, when you see the movie, you'll see what we're talking about. I've dealt with hundreds of big cats, and you could go into somebody's home, and a big cat does not act like the ones you see on TV. And you know what the most dangerous thing in the world is?
I have lions and tigers, and they do that.
They do that?
Individual personalities.
Mm-hmm.
They
do have individual personalities. But when you take a big cat out on a stage like that, you got a time bomb. You know what's going to trigger that animal. So if you've been around big cats, you know sometimes you may not want to wear a certain cologne, let's say Obsession with black leopards, because they have a tendency to go off on you. Or you may not have to have six beers before you handle your big cat.
Yeah, actually, I did try the black leopard, and, you know, it's just a new smell. If they're used to this, it's no big deal.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't advise anybody to do it because I've been through this so many times. I saw so many people seriously hurt, as you'll see on the film. And these people are the same as what you're saying. I just pray that you don't get hurt in the process of what you're doing.
I'm in the film sitting there with my cougar.
Oh, you're in the film? Oh, hey, how you doing? Yeah, the whole thing is that, let me ask you a question. If you remember clearly, that cougar probably didn't have his claws, does it?
It doesn't have her front claws, no.
Absolutely not. And that cougar actually jumps up and grabs at a ball that if that was a real had its real claws, it would blow that ball out to kingdom come.
And the thing is, if you have an animal with claws, you can trim the claws just like you can with domestic animal, so they're not as sharp. So it's just like a dull thumbnail.
Yeah, you can trim the cat's claws. But let me ask you a question. Why did you declaw the cougar then?
Because it was unfair because some of the when girlfriend got started, she declawed the first one, and we have them with the dogs. It gives them an unfair advantage, and it gives them a greater run of the house because we raise them inside the house and offers them more opportunity. And plus, if you've ever seen an animal get a claw hung in its enclosure, that it's actually more painful.
Yeah, that's true. Let me ask you a question, though. What happens if you and your girlfriend die?
It's in our will. We have it specified who takes care of the animals and where they shall go.
Okay, let's hope that's true, because a lot of times when people, we just had a few years ago, we had an elderly couple that was killed in a motorcycle accident. They had a bunch of big cats and bears on their property, and what was heck trying to find places for them to go?
I mean, we got it all spelled out. I mean, we got an emergency
good.
Plan with the local fire department. We brought in the fire department and trained three platoons on the property, the animals, the handling. They know to call us if they have an exotic animal that they don't know how to deal with. And, you know, there are responsible owners out there, but you make it sound like that everybody's bad.
No, no, no. The ones I'm going after are the people that don't know what they're doing, the regular Tom, Dick, and Leroy's out here that should not have these animals. Let me ask you a question. This perfect example is when Terry had his lions, he, urine organization contacted him. Everybody contacted him. I was the only organization that stepped in to help him. Where was everybody else at? That's the thing that really shocked me. That's one of the things we didn't bring up in the film, but nobody was there to help him.
Okay, you know, I think there's so many other callers, and we're almost out of our time for interview. But, caller, I really appreciate it. I think we've learned a few things just from your exchange here with Tim. Thank you very much for calling Talking Animals today.
Take care.
All right,
thank
you.
Take care.
All right. So here's another email, Tim. It says, thanks for the show. I wish more people could hear. My next-door neighbor works at Tampa's Busch Gardens as an animal trainer. I've always been against keeping wild animals for human entertainment, but she says that Busch is a quote-unquote conservation park that saves animals from becoming extinct while providing valuable research information about these animals to those working to save them. I think Busch Gardens is getting a tax write-off for their animal program to help shelter their theme park profits, and that is their main goal, but I do see them taking good care of the animals. What can Tim tell us about this?
All I can tell you is with places like that, is you noticed when that young girl was killed by the orca. I'm not calling them killer whales, because killer whales was a word that we used as people in North America to sell the product to the people. The orca killed that young girl. He'd already killed two other people at two other locations. He's been rewarded every time he's killed somebody. He's been rewarded. But with me, with Busch Gardens and places like that, they have a tendency to go for the money first. As you could tell, you heard Jack Hanna, as you talked about, with Rick O'Berry. And you listened to the way they talked to people when they were interviewed, the president of SeaWorld, the president of Busch Gardens. All these people talk like it's, you know, we're going to get right back out and start the show over again. You know, we'll do a little memorial thing, and we go right back to doing it again. They don't let it just like almost it's just totally about the money. And when they went after Tippi Hedren on the show, if you remember that or not, when they went after her about that, when she's there is trying to help the animals.
Yeah.
When those people went after her, that's when I decided it's time for me to get on radio shows. It's time for me to get out here and protect Tippi, Rick O'Berry doesn't need me to protect him. He knows what he's doing. But for get out there and help these people, because they're right. You know, they're absolutely 100% right. And these people that keep them in captivity are wrong.
Yeah. Well, Tim, again, we are speaking with Tim Harrison, a recently, I guess, retired public safety officer and kind of at the center of this acclaimed documentary, The Elephant in the Living Room, just came out on DVD yesterday. We've got just maybe a minute or so left, Tim, but I just want to be sure before we go, because you've made a passing reference to it, but I know this is kind of a near and dear to you. Tell us a little bit about Outreach for Animals, what it does and how people could get involved. You mentioned the trips that you guys take, but there's a lot of other things you do as well.
Yeah, Outreach for Animals was started by police officers, firefighters, paramedics, emergency room doctors around the country. We started this because we're always the first ones called in. Just remember the San Francisco Zoo when the tiger got loose. They hid inside the zoo and called 911. The cops had to come in and take care of it. So we're out there trying to protect the public Our whole goal is to teach proper behavior around wildlife. Sounds like common sense, right?
Yep.
That's what our organization's about. Get in contact with us, outreachforanimals.org. We're here to help you. We don't keep any animals in captivity, but we'll be here to help you if you have a problem with an animal or with a person. Also, too, get on theelephantintheliveringroom.com and get yourself a Blu-ray or DVD right now. It's open for everybody to pick them up now. Get on iTunes, Amazon.com, and please get on Facebook and just like us. We'd appreciate it.
Great, Tim. Well, again, I'm sorry we didn't get to all the calls and all the emails. Certainly triggered all kinds of response, and I was glad to hear from the people that we did. So again, this has been Tim Harrison. The documentary is The Elephant in the Living Room. The website for that is theelephantintheliveringroom.com and outreachforanimals.org for the other organization that Tim just mentioned. Thank you so much, Tim, for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals.
No problem. No problem. Work me in again sometime.
Absolutely. Well, when your new book is out, we'll definitely have you on again to talk about that.
Sounds great, Duncan.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye.
All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Erasure on August 31st at the Ritz Ebor. So the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. In a moment, we'll remember John Taylor, a great friend of mine and a great friend of Talking Animals. Right now, though, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Yeah, that's Love Cat.
Okay, cool. You are correct, sir. It's The Love Cats by The Cure. What is your first name, sir?
My name is Doug.
Doug? Okay, we're going to have to put you on hold, and we'll get your information to send you off to see Erasure 1 week from tonight at the Ritz Ebor. So thanks for listening. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, folks, we do have a winner. Doug knew that it was the Love Cats, so. All right. So I do want to talk for a moment or two about my friend John Taylor, who lost his valiant battle against kidney cancer on Saturday at the age of 49. I hope you'll indulge me for a few minutes here and forgive me if my voice gets shaky, really shaky or worse. For starters, John was absolutely pivotal to the birth, evolution, and success, if that's the right word, of Talking Animals. He devised the Talking Animals logo, created the Talking Animals website, which he also maintained and updated from the start in 2003 until November when he was diagnosed with the cancer. In addition, he created the Talking Animals Festival logo and designed both the poster and the t-shirt for the first festival. I know it really bothered him that he didn't feel up to contributing to the second festival. Stuff he did for the festival and the radio shows weren't jobs. They weren't duties. He really loved the Talking Animals world. Part of that had to do with being an unusually nice man and great friend. This was an important passion of mine, so it was an important passion of his. But this passion also came to him naturally. John was a longtime huge animal lover. He leaves behind a beautiful suite Rhodesian Ridgeback named Maggie, long pictured on the show website as a West Coast correspondent, who now will live with John's wonderful friend, Russ. And John shared my particular passion and love for elephants. Mostly, though, John was enormously kind and compassionate in the way that often defines animal people. He had plenty of other passions, too. He loved books. He loved films. He loved photography, art. He relished buying hats and collected tribal masks. He loved beer, good beer. And when he moved to Fullerton, California a few years ago, he found a second home and a slew of great new friends at a lovely British pub there called The Old Ship. Perhaps John's biggest passion was music. Sure, he was a fan. Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Eno, Robert Fripp, Van Morrison, Robin Hitchcock, Nick Lowe, new bands like Sea of Bees, many others. But John made great music as a singer-songwriter, guitarist, multi-instrumentalist, and lots of it. Lots of it. He wrote and recorded 14 albums of music, some under his name, some under the band name Whisper Machine. It's a remarkable body of work, from acoustic instrumentals like this stellar one playing underneath me right now, to atmospheric soundscapes, to Full Tilt Rockers, and more. John was a man who impressed you as quiet, low-key, and gentle. Then he'd step on an electric guitar and impress you in a completely different way, deftly and ferociously playing that guitar in loud, glorious bursts. Like many wildly talented people, he was a bit shy and introverted until he was creating or performing. Among his many extraordinary qualities, John truly had the heart of an artist. We're going to hear one of his songs now, not an animal tune, but one of my favorite John songs of the last few years, selected partly because it sounds a bit celestial to me and may suggest a journey, the notion of being transported, which seems just right at the moment. This is my friend John Taylor, who wrote this, sang, and played all the instruments, his song, Beyond the Cloudy Veil.
Oh,
That's John Taylor, a.k.a. Whisper Machine, with Beyond the Cloudy Veil. I've received many lovely notes from listeners and friends about John's passing, and I'm going to steal a line from one of those notes. Rest in peace and run free with the critters, John. Indeed. I like to think he is running free with the critters. They'll be happy to see him, and is lucky to get to know him, as I was. All right, we just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, August 31st at 11 a.m. when our guest will be Michael Hingson, author of the new book Thunder Dog, The True Story of a Blind Man, His Guide Dog, and the Triumph of Trust at Ground Zero. A spirited yarn about Hingson, blind since birth, working in the Twin Towers on 9/11, and being led from the 78th floor by his guide dog Roselle, and his life before and after that day. That's next Wednesday, August 31st. I hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show. As always, with an animal tune from Van Morrison. John loved Van Morrison. So here's Van Morrison with the lion this time, taking us up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals.
The lion this time of day is in the circus in a cage. He's trying to break out of the frame, the lion this time. He hears that same old sad refrain, but they can't hold him with no chain, and they just can't denounce his claim, the lion again. Yeah, they're trying to get free. You know that something's bothering me, then I'm not too blind to see the lion again. Oh, the loving's in his soul, he's trying to get out, you know. Only you could hear it roar, the lion again this time. They couldn't take away his throne. He knows that he must stand alone. He'll need be held a heart of stone, the lion again. The lion this time again, he's in the circus in a cage. No wonder that he's in a rage, the lion again. Well, I'm not too the line is tied. The longing lives in a soul, trying to get out you know. Only you could hear it roar for the line this time. They couldn't take away his throne. He knows that he must stand alone. He'll need me of a heart of stone. The lion king. The line again, the line this time, the line this time, the line this time, the line.